Good morning, everybody, and happy Tuesday. Welcome to the Bitcoin Veteran Spaces, episode 106. I am your host, Coleman, and I want to say thank you for everybody who's tuning in, who's listening to us, who's joining this space. We have Matthew Lysak joining us, the author of Fiat Foods. If you're listening to this space, you've heard me say this quite a few times, but this is becoming one of my favorite 1-2 punches to orange pill people. I pass out the Bitcoin standard and then I will pass out Fiat Foods to try and get them from a different angle if the Bitcoin standard is just a little bit over their head. Everybody eats, everybody can relate to this book, everybody can see the problem. So it's really easy to digest. And I was rereading it again to get ready for this interview. And just some of the facts and the points that Matthew articulates and brings out is just, it always shocks me, and that they're able to get away with it. So I definitely want to dive into this. And, without further ado, I want to welcome Matthew to the stage. Good morning, sir. Matthew, can you hear me, sir?
Oh, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now. Yes, sir. How are you?
Yeah, thanks for having me as a guest. I appreciate it. I always have a great time on your show.
Yeah, definitely. So if you don't mind, for anybody who might be new to your work or just kind of listening to this one and they didn't listen to the previous episode we had with you, can you give them a little background about yourself?
I'm an investigative reporter. I worked at the New York Daily News for about 10 years, and during my time there, the Daily News was the fifth biggest paper in the country. And my job specifically was to tackle breaking news around the country. So anytime something big broke, I would parachute in and specifically try to get motive of the crime. I also dealt a lot with government corruption, which came in very, very handy with this book. I transitioned out of the New York Daily News in 2012 after I began publishing books. My first book was about the shooting at Sandy Hook. I published with Simon & Schuster. I've since worked with every major publisher, done a lot of magazine work. This book, Fiat Food, was really a passion project for me. I mean, honestly, I didn't expect anybody to buy it. It's such a niche, like, topic. I'm actually kind of shocked by its popularity. I think we just agreed to terms to, publish in now the seventh different country in different language. So it's been quite a interesting journey, with Fiat Food, and one, to be honest with you, that I didn't expect.
Well, that's awesome. I'm glad that it surprised you, but to be honest with you, it's not that surprising that it's so popular. Again, everyone can see the issues going on and the way that you just shine light on how corrupt this whole industry is. And the thing is that I really found just easy was the fact that it's easy to read. Like it's not a difficult read. It's not like, oh my gosh, I got to read another chapter. It just blows by really, really easy. So I really do appreciate that.
Yeah. Thanks, man. I think that's largely in part because I'm not a mathematician, not an economist. I'm not a dietitian, but as somebody trained in tabloid writing, I just try to really break it down in the simplest components because nothing frustrates me more when I'm reading than when I can tell the author is trying to like impress their college professor friends. I think at its core, writing should be communicating effectively. And, so I appreciate that. That's what I'm striving to do.
Well, you have a new book that you're writing as well, correct? It looked like you broke that news middle of December, Fiat Medicine.
Fiat Medicine, we are almost finished with it, and I don't have a release date yet, but it's going to be within the next 3 months.
That's awesome. Are you doing it yourself, or are you writing it with somebody else?
It's going to be primarily me. I'm working with a few other people. I don't think they've released their information on that yet, so I have to keep that on the DL. So we're going to definitely have a lot of assistance, cause this is a big topic. Fiat medicine, it's very different than fiat food, where fiat food you can see how the financial incentives shifted medicine so much. In fiat medicine, it's more about fiat by government decree. Obviously economics play a huge role, but it's different in scope of motive, but with, fiat medicine, it's dark, man. Like, I have to tell you, I've never worked on a book that's so dark when you go through the history of medicine and how it's evolved. And it's largely been an education for me as well. I'm excited to get that out into the world.
Well, that's surprising, especially with some of the things that you discovered in fiat foods. Well, I guess I should say it's not that surprising, but it's just, again, that you're taken aback by some of the discoveries. It's going to make for an interesting read.
Yeah, I hope so. It's just like the scale of corruption exceeds, I think will shock your audience. I mean, I think your audience is already skeptical of establishment, but what is uncovered when you really peel back the onion on the history of medicine, when you go back to the American Medical Association and how a lot of these entities evolved and rose to power, it's dark and sinister, and human life is often disregarded.
Can anybody hear Matthew, or is it just me?
Am I coming in?
You're coming in now. I just heard that last little piece.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, I'm somebody who's worked on almost every mass shooting in the past two decades as a reporter. So when I say this is dark, and like, I mean it. I mean, it's the tale of the American Heart Association and Rockefeller's role in the shaping of American medicine, and a lot of the union work. And then when the government grants get involved, NIH, I mean, I could speak to you for 4 hours about it, but I'll wait till the book comes out and make sure I get a copy in your hands.
Well, I can't wait for it to come out. And as soon as it does, we'll have to get you back on the space, because I definitely want to pick your brain about it. It looks like Guillermo, you have your hand up.
There's that microphone again.
Did you get it figured out, Eddie?
While we wait for Yomar. There you go.
Triple muted. Great. So I just want to say, first off, Matt, really enjoyed your book. I read it after the last time you were here. And I think what's really cool is that it's a great way, and Coleman kind of alluded to this, but it's a great way to get people to have some interest in like economics, finance, and Bitcoin, with where they normally won't. Like, for example, my wife has no interest in any of that, but I was able to get her to listen to Fiat Food. So it kind of got the foot in the door, at least. So, big props for that, because that was something I've been trying to do for years now. So thank you.
Thanks, Omar. When I wrote the book, I wasn't exactly sure how it would all come together. And I really thought that government, the tie-in between corporate greed would have more of a pull in terms of the motive of how our food system became degraded. And when I received a lot of FOIA requests that came finally by the time I got finished, I got a lot of Freedom of Information Act requests, some government documents. It was just overwhelming, the case that, wow, okay, so the government actually is shifting our food supply to obscure the consequences of monetary inflation. And if you just say that at the bar to your friend, you look insane. But I appreciate your wife reading it, because it does. Like, I had to go back to the beginning to make that case, I felt, or otherwise you're just sort of left with like these absurd claims. And even though I cite the evidence over and over again, I think I have over 200 citations in that book. But I tried to write it from, you know, the standpoint of somebody like myself who doesn't understand a lot of these things. I wasn't a Bitcoiner up until a few years ago. I didn't naturally evolve into that space. I'm an investigative reporter. So, hearing that your wife liked it, I really appreciate it. My wife was slightly bored by my book, she said. So it's great.
Nice. And then the only other thing I wanted to say, before I hand it back to Coleman is, so I read that book, and then I also read another book, Big Fat Surprise, which, you know, covers some similar stuff. I don't remember if you cited it or not. I somehow went right from your book to that book.
Nina Teicholz has done great work. So that's the other thing. I've had the ability as an investigative reporter to stand on the shoulders a lot of really great minds who did a lot of the hard work, but didn't put the pieces together in the same way I did. And Nina Teicholz, Big Fat Surprise, is one of them. She spent 10 years on that book. And what she uncovered was that the diet heart hypothesis was a complete fraud. And she outlines, if you want to know more about how that system evolved, I can't recommend a better book.
Yeah. And what really struck me with that, and I'm curious, like, if this surfaces in, your upcoming book, but when she outlaid how they silenced the critics of the low fat diet, you know, she talked about how, like, they were just simply, cut out of, like, the academic discussions, how funding was stripped from them. It was just such a, like, almost identical to the tactics that were used, when COVID was happening. You know, people were completely ostracized from, like, the different communities, like the academic communities, funding, all of that stuff. It was like the same exact, it seemed to me at least, with my limited knowledge, like the same exact playbook that we used, or that the government used, against like people that were asking questions about COVID, you know? So it's interesting to see like those two, like that tactic seem to resurface and be used again. Did you notice that kind of similarity? Did you discuss that in your book at all, or?
Omar, as a teenager, I used to, or even in my 20s, I used to look at North Korea and think, what would that be like to live in this dystopia where you think your great leader always gets a hole in one and you have no access to information? And I used to sort of just wonder, and recently it occurred to me that I've been living in that world. And we're not much different than North Korea, most Americans. And I say that not with glee at all. I mean that. Like, our information controlled by authority has been circumvented to such an extent that in every facet of existence almost, that I'm convinced now that the only reason I think certain things are not corrupted is because I just haven't investigated and done the hard work yet. And I used to be like a conventional journalist. I mean, I used to be on MSNBC and Fox News and the Today Show and Good Morning America. And I've found that I've become kind of like an outcast amongst journalism, my former peers. But luckily, to counter this barrage of information control, this Orwellian bullshit that we're sort of swimming in right now, this podcast world has evolved. And one of the reasons I was worried about this book, and I'm happy to say, like, I've done well financially. I didn't expect this book to make any money or to sell a lot. Didn't need it to. But I was like, who's gonna, like, I would never get, when you write a book, you know, you go through a major publisher like I have, and then they book you on all the TV shows, and that's how you get all your sales. I mean, literally, that's it. Like, you get almost all your sales in the first window of time after release, and then the rest is a trickle. What's happened now with the decentralization of information through podcasts and the internet, it's allowed me to reach new audiences that I never expected would have any interest in this book, and it to bypass the mainstream. So I feel like actually really optimistic now, more so than I was before, where You know, my book Newtown will come out, or Breakthrough, or The Drudge Revolution. I have to be reliant on the media apparatus to let me in, to let me speak, for the gatekeepers to give me permission. Right now, I mean, I'm on Bitcoin Veterans. I'm on, I do like, I really probably do a podcast two or three a week. And I love it because it's also a more in-depth venue. So I think, yeah, you're right. I'm coming across this idea that the information is completely controlled. I don't think we're much different than North Korea right now in terms of what the mainstream American right now believes, but I do think it's changing, in a good direction.
Matthew, do you think that just the combination of topics at the perfect time also aided in this? Because, you know, the kind of the subtitle of your book is, if I remember right, something to do with inflation, right? Why inflation destroyed our health. Do you think, you know, just because inflation has been such a big topic since the pandemic and, you know, a lot of people were questioning the vaccine mandates, that this is just a popular topic because of what's going on in the world?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I'm much different than most of your audience. I think COVID changed me. Before COVID, I think I had even though I dealt with corruption, I've interviewed former presidents and senators and governors, and I know government corruption, and I've always been skeptical. But I still had this base belief in the fundamental institutions of America. COVID broke that. I'm not the same. I'm just not. And I think a lot of your audience is probably with me there. I no longer outsource any of my critical thinking or decision making to credentialed authority. In fact, instead of respecting any credential, I am now immediately thinking critically, like the opposite of what they are pushing out. And I know that this has happened with a lot of people. So you look at what's happened, the best minds in nutrition, the greatest credentials in nutrition, these assholes at the Tufts Food Compass who spent their whole life researching nutrition. And what do they come out with in January of 2023? The Tufts Food Compass, which tells us that Fruit Loops are healthier than red meat, that chocolate almond milk is healthier than whole milk. I mean, like, what? Like, these people spent their whole lives researching this. And then you pull the curtain back and you see that the same cereals promoted as healthy, General Mills and Kellogg's, 55 of them specifically, have they've been funded. They funded the study. I mean, this is one example, but I could list you 1,000. And I feel like COVID has been a blessing for me. And I think for a lot of people, because it broke that, man. Like, I'm not, I think people distrust authority and they're putting retaking their self autonomy and they're trusting themselves again. Like, look, dude, nobody needs to buy my book to know what to eat. Just stop eating Fruit Loops, right? Like, eat what your great-great-grandmother ate. She was probably right.
So Matthew, kind of along those lines, like, I've seen a lot of stuff lately on the life expectancy charts for Canada and the United States, and how since the pandemic that's gone down a couple of years. Are you touching on that in the new book, just related to both the food and the health?
Yeah. I mean, my book's primarily going to deal with the crime. So kind of like Fiat Food, my book isn't a health book. I don't spend a lot of time making the argument why meat is better. What I'm trying to do is show the audience in Fiat Food what happened and why we now, why our food supply shifted so much since 1971. And in Fiat Medicine, it's the same path. Like, there's so many good books that can show your audience and highlight all the evidence on what the proper approach to medicine is. My book's pulling the curtain down on the corruption that's happened. And I think that your audience will be able to draw, in the same way they're able to draw from Fiat Food, what the proper, you know, way to go is, I think they'll be able to draw the same conclusions with fiat medicine.
So Matthew, we're talking about how much we distrust the government and the elected officials. Do you think any of that will be restored with RFK and his new kind of health plan he wants to implement? Or do you think that there's just, it's too embedded and he doesn't stand a chance?
Guys, I hate to be this guy. He has no shot. I mean, I don't want to underestimate Trump. He's dude's a force of nature, no doubt. I know people in, I don't know Kennedy personally. I've met him twice. I always found him to be a very sincere guy and obviously remarkably bright. By the way, the guy's not a reporter and he's not an investigative journalist. His book on Fauci was amazing journalistic work. And the citations and the work involved, and I don't know if he had a team or what, but whatever he did blew me away. And I recommend that book to everybody. But I'm cynical, man. Like, I think if you look at who's funding the people who are about to vote for him, they're the pharmaceutical companies. I mean, I could send you the list. It's both sides of the aisle. They're heavily ingrained in this. And the hearings that are going to come, you know, take place tomorrow. The other thing is that your audience should understand the people who are in Congress and in the Senate, many of them hate Trump, who are talking Trump up. I mean, they hate him and they want him to go down and they want to see all of his nominees go down. I mean, you saw Mitch McConnell vote against the Secretary of Defense nominee, Hegseth, who is like, has a great track record. I mean, I know his personal life seems a little messed up, but they all have messed up personal lives. So I'm cynical. But I'm hopeful. I mean, I think there's a chance. I just don't want to get your audience, from what I've been told, he has 9 votes in the GOP ready to go against him. And, you'll be surprised by some of the names. And this is before he even speaks. Okay. So just, there's 9 Republicans already who are lined up to stop this nomination. But on the upside, I've heard purely speculative. This is a rumor. I'm throwing it out there because it's a rumor from somebody I trust. That if he does go down, that Trump's going to appoint him to a position within the government that would give him some kind of power over these positions. And I think that's the best we can hope for.
Power over what positions?
It's not clear. I was told it'd be in the field of vaccine and health. Whatever that means. Trump has appointed made these little task forces. And I think it'd come under that. And I think at the very least, what we'll see is the information coming out on the vaccines. A lot of the work that, Aaron Seary has done and Del Bigtree that have worked really hard to get the release of a lot of the medical data underlying a lot of the health remedies in America, like vaccines, has been hidden. And I think there's a really great chance that that will come out. And then that could be the spark that starts the fire that moves us in a different direction. And I think that could be really substantive. I'm hopeful.
Do you cover, if you're able to talk about it, do you cover any of the vaccine like effects in your new book, Fiat Medicine?
Yeah, but just from a high up view, I think I refer everybody to Kennedy's book as a really great, great resource for that. I mean, the thing that everybody just needs to know about the vaccines is that you would never go to a store and buy a food where you couldn't sue the manufacturer if they poison you. I mean, it's just remarkably telling that they can only exist if they're not allowed to be held accountable when they poison people. And it's like in 1986, Reagan's the one who okayed this, and Reagan asked Pfizer the Pfizer rep at the time, why they don't just make their vaccine safe? And the Pfizer rep responded, we'd be out of business. It's impossible to make the vaccines 100% safe. So yeah, I mean, I think there's other better resources for that than fiat medicine to really dive into the history of vaccines. But I do touch on it because it's fundamental to the shift in medicine.
I'm really excited about that book. My wife works in the medical field, so I think that'll be another one that she, will listen to or read. So that's pretty cool. And like, do you cover, so you mentioned like the corruption in it. So are you focused primarily on like just like the government side of corruption, or do you also look at like the medical industry? Like, for example, like there is, you know, kind of like the pill mills from doctors and stuff like that. So, do you go into that aspect of it as well, or is it more so just like, you know, this is how the government facilitated this?
So I have a strict rule as a writer that, look, I'm not Hemingway, so I don't want to waste my audience's time, and I try to keep my books under 75,000 words. People are busy, so I have to really streamline what I decide to tackle and try to make it as cohesive as possible, especially on a really big topic. So I don't, my main focus is, it's more like the government's role, and there's no short of information on this. I mean, you see all these organizations in the beginning of the 1900s begin to push certain viewpoints that are profitable for them, but you find only when the government steps in and eliminates the ability for people to choose. And this is what I've come up with again and again. I mean, there's literally people in jail right now because they shared apricot seeds with their patients. I mean, they're in jail today over this. This is true. It's like, I think that these large institutions are always going to try to make as much money as they possibly can over medicine, but I do believe that as long as people have free choice, then nature will reassert itself in a positive way. What we have now in America, and what became very clear to me from researching this book, is that our authorities try to make us seem like we have a choice, but we don't. I mean, they've structured the conversation in such a way where we're kind of all in these individual ghettos over what we can talk about. And even though now you can go online and say, I think COVID came from a lab leak. Like, well, obviously it did. I mean, of course they were doing gain of function research there. And you couldn't say that a few years ago, but today in medicine, I have to be careful in my book and constantly write the words, I am not a physician. You know, or else I could be in prison for practicing medicine without a license, which happens all the time to people. And it's one of the main ways that the government prevents alternative medications from being released into the mainstream.
That is crazy. I didn't know that. Really quick though, before we get into the next question, Matthew, I want to just say thank you to our partners, Black Sheep Ammo. Restock your ammo at blacksheepammo.com. Punch Plate, stamp your seed phrase on a metal plate at punchplate.com. Paladin Tower Tactics, professional firearm and tactical training at paladintowertactics.com. And Solo Satoshi, open source Bitcoin mining. Use the code BTCVETS for 5% off your order. And if you pay with Bitcoin, there's an additional 10% off. So 15% off your order, solosatoshi.com. Bitcoin Alaska, July 5th and 6th in Juneau, family-friendly conference. Get your tickets and hotel reservations at bitcoinalaska.org. And up in the nest, there is a link for cold card hardware wallets. Treat your Bitcoin like it's 10x what it is today. Take your Bitcoin off any exchange, put it on a cold card, use that link up there to support Bitcoin veterans. So Matthew, as I was reading through again, some of the things you highlight in the book, just, it always surprises me. So I wanted to, like, some of my big takeaways that I still can't believe is the water with the University of Idaho. That one still just baffles me, the amount of toxins and pills that are in our drinking water. But also just Dr. Kellogg and just how cruel he was, and that whole like two or three chapters you have on that. I'd like to know what's your like just shocking moment or like, I can't believe this was actually happening.
Well, first of all, I think Saifedean Ammous, my mentor, is listening. So I'm completely nervous that I'm going to screw this up. I see him in a little thing listening there. Hey, Saif. John Harvey Kellogg was a complete sociopath, 100%. And when I'm going through the history of food and nutrition, I was a bit shocked because I was a kid growing up in the 90s eating Kellogg cereal and eating it with my skim milk and thinking, well, this is what the health professionals are saying is the best thing to eat, the most healthy way to go. So my shock when I looked back on what John Harvey Kellogg represented, his thoughts and his beliefs were absolutely mind-blowing. I mean, this is a guy who advocated pouring carbolic acid on the clitorises of young women. He recommended having surgery performed on young men without anesthesia so that they'd have muscle memory. And he is the one who developed Kellogg's cornflakes essentially as an anti-masturbatorial drug to prevent young men from feeling carnal desires, which at the time were believed to be the root cause of almost every single health malady under the sun. And, you know, so this, it's hard to overstate John Harvey Kellogg's influence in nutrition because he was like this real celebrity doctor of the day. He gave speeches, he wrote books, he discussed on and on. He was able to get his viewpoint out to the masses. And it was a very, very popular belief at the time. But what's really shocking is that this wasn't just some fringe view that kind of went away. It became part of the nutritional establishment endorsed by the federal government through the American Dietetic Association, which became a real champion, almost inseparable from the Seventh-day Adventist Church. After John Harvey left the church, I mean, he discovered that the founder of the church, Ellen G. White, was actually lying to everybody and was eating meat. Fried chicken in particular, there's letters online that you could find that, where the chef, of the Seventh-day Adventist Church is complaining about Lana Cooper eating so much meat. You find that by 1970, the Seventh-day Adventist Church had grown to such an extent that, and this belief, this mainstream idea that meat was bad for you had become much more popular, but still not mainstream. I mean, it was still like in 1970, the average American still ate about 155 pounds of red meat a year. They ate meat for breakfast, they ate meat for lunch, and they ate meat for dinner. What happened in 1971 changed everything when Nixon decoupled from gold. And what you see from that point in the in the changes in the American diet, I mean, are just absolutely mind blowing. So basically red meat was cut in half from then. And you begin seeing all of the fiat money printer begin pushing all these non-foods or foods that were traditionally not eaten by our ancestors. And I mean, I think you could see the results of that in the health of the American public today.
I think the thing that like stuck out to me and is like very easy to relate to people is how, you mentioned, I forget where in the book, but you mentioned how like shortly after that, they pushed studies, showing that like eggs are like quote bad for you, cause they were worried about the price of eggs, that were increasing. And that to me is just like something that's so like, you know, if you look around on Twitter right now, you'll see pictures of people posting like egg prices. So that to me is like a really easy to relate to people, thing. And it's just like, you know, now it's like pretty well accepted that eggs are not bad for you, that they're good for you. So that to me is like a great, like, you know, when I talk to people about the book, I'm like, oh, like, that's kind of like the one line, like, elevator pitch that I lead with, because it's just so, so relatable. And then they can get into all the other, you know, corruption and deceit that, you know, led to our horrific food pyramid, which they still use. I don't know if anybody has like kids that are school age, but they still use that. You know, I make sure that my kids know, like, you know, you can have, I don't put them on like a strictly, carnivore diet, but they know like any carbs on their plate, they eat last. You know, they fill up on the, you know, the meats first, then they can do like veggies. And then if there's like some sort of carb on the plate, they eat that. And it's funny because the other day they were like, my oldest was like quizzing the younger two to see if they knew, like, you know, they were naming like two foods, like, you know, what's, you know, eggs or cereal, and like picking which one is better. So like, you know, I guess the point I'm trying to make is like, you know, hopefully we start at a young age and start, correcting that behavior. Cause I know when I was growing up, I knew absolutely nothing, and my parents didn't either, anything about, you know, food, nutrition, stuff like that. So, I guess you and Safe can work on a children's book on food next, you know, when you got some time waiting for, Fiat Medicine to be published.
Oh man, that's a great idea. The egg thing, it just blows my mind, and that people still believe that complete garbage, that eggs are bad for you. And it was, of course, you're right. Lyndon Johnson, Surgeon General, wrote a phony press release that said, yeah, eggs are bad. This is not a conspiracy theory. This is published in Samuelson's book, who worked in Lyndon Johnson's staff and was part of these conversations. Eggs were going up in price. And look, governments understand, and they've historically understood, that people will tolerate tons of corruption and they'll tolerate endless war. But when food prices go too high, as we saw in Sri Lanka in 2022, people freak the fuck out, and they will storm the palaces, and the leaders will have to flee. So the correlation between high food prices and government instability is not lost on authorities. And as a result, I mean, like, we see these again and again situations. You're taking eggs, but it's anything that can't be mass produced, like a Dorito, right? So we have a situation in America where there's the appearance of abundance. And truthfully, I have four daughters, so I can go and buy six boxes of cereal, and based by that metric, I can feed my whole family, and it's pretty cheap. But the nutrients needed for humans to thrive have become cost prohibitive. And in America, they're increasingly becoming a food of the upper classes.
Yeah, that's something I think of a lot. Like, you know, I'm pretty fortunate, my wife and I, and we have three kids, and it's like, you know, even we look at our grocery bill and we're like, wow, like, that's, you know, it's a lot, you know? So I can only imagine like people that aren't as fortunate, you know, trying to feed their families and like what they have to resort to, in order to get like those calories. You know, it's not like a knock on them. It's just like the situation that we have, today, you know, it's, very unfortunate. And I'm sorry, I cut some people off there.
No, you're good. I just wanted to say, Dr. Saifedean Ammous, you are welcome up here on the panel if you'd like to give your insight on some of the shenanigans that's going on within our food system. And I just want to say thank you for coming in here. I know Eomar has been trying to get you to join our space for some time, so I'm glad that you just stopped in, even if you're just going to listen. But Shane, you have your hand up, so I'll let you go ahead, sir.
Yeah, good morning, everybody. Matt, it's really good to have you here. I think, you know, a lot of us have woken up to, you know, the food and drug industries out there and just how they're wreaking absolute chaos on everybody. Are you going to be covering any of the solutions to this in your book, in terms of maybe, you know, three different points that maybe you can point out to us, or what your recommendations would be to, you know, people who are out there who are kind of not as well read into this, but are coming around?
Yeah, you know, the solutions part of medicine, is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in terms of like, you know, building new networks and doing all these things to get away from their influence and their impact.
I think the first thing is really one of the most difficult steps, and it's something I've had to take, and that's to just step outside of the system. Like, we are not forced into this system. Stay away from your fat doctor. Like, stay away from media, American news media. I mean, I feel like we've been living like North Koreans, where the information's been so tightly controlled. Unlike a lot of people in North Korea, though, we do have the ability to just check out of it and kind of go back to our the foundations of our thoughts and our beliefs and our existence as humans. And from that vantage point, try to take a fresh look, because we've all been psyoped. And I think once you do that, once we just sort of cleanse, when Safe wrote the fiat standard, what it did to me was it didn't teach me so much as explained how little I knew that I thought I knew. I'm not sure if that makes sense. Like, I didn't understand how little I actually knew. And I had all this false information. And that's the first step, to cleanse yourself of all of the bullshit that we've been fed for years. And then I think things are kind of obvious, and everything will fall closer into line. I hope that makes sense. I apologize, guys. I'm kind of getting over a small respiratory virus right now. So, I know my voice is a little bit shaky.
Now that makes sense. That's like that curve that you see sometimes of like the level of expertise. Like, there's the level where you're like, you're super confident and you actually know very little. And then as you learn more, like it like goes down that, I'm probably explaining it poorly, but I think you guys get what I'm talking about. That's kind of, what you're describing. I think, Matthew, like, you know, you think you know everything. And then once like somebody starts to show you the things you don't know, you're like, oh, wait a minute. Like, I have so much to learn. You know, I think that's a lot of people once they start looking at, you know, once they look up or, you know, turn away from that wall, you know, and look at reality. You know, that's when we start seeing, all these things that all these narratives that kind of crumble and fall apart.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Accurate.
Reagan had a great quote on this. He said that his liberal friends, it wasn't that they were dumb, is that they just had so much information that in their heads that wasn't true. And I think about that a lot, about including myself. Like, man, I had all these ideas. And then when you have these base ideas that are false and you start building other wrong ideas off of them, you become a shitstorm of a human. And then you're eating Doritos on your sofa at 2 a.m. and you're wondering why you feel depressed.
Yeah, Matt, I think you answered the question. I didn't have any idea, you know, how evil, just evil in the planning and the manipulation and the money that was going into this before I had read, you know, Safadine's book, the Fiat Standard. I mean, I remember driving on 16 from, you know, Macon down to Savannah when I came across that part, and I had to go back and re-listen to it. And I think you're right, you know, divorcing yourself. I mean, we homestead and homeschool, and we've unplugged, you know, as much as possible from the matrix and even the water supply and everything else. And, you know, doctors to be able to refit and plug into information that, you know, comes from our past that was, you know, hey, listen, you know, red meat is great. Butter is great. Eggs are great. Like, all of these things. And then, you know, trying to find ways and different herbs and plants that are out there. You mentioned earlier that somebody got in jail for apricot seeds that I think, you know, if I remember correctly, are, you know, literally proven to fight cancer or be at least anti-carcinogenic. You know, these, having this, you know, world out there that is at our fingertips, where we can go out and research and really put the work into understanding our own food, which is going to help our health. And then obviously educating our family and our kids on this at an early age. You know, this is the culture war, Matt. And I think you guys are, you know, absolutely doing everybody a huge service in addressing this and waking them up and then, you know, providing those solutions.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I think you're completely right. Congrats on homeschooling. Congrats on homesteading. We have some goats and pigs out here. We have a big spot of land. I live about 18 miles from the Mexican border in the Arizona desert. So yeah, I'm trying to, but it's also hard because I've been conditioned since I've been a kid and I can't get away from pretending like I haven't been. And cutting a cord, it's as difficult as it is, it's also remarkably liberating. So I go many months out of the year where I don't have any access to American news. And at no point in my year do I feel more vibrant and more in tune with reality.
I don't think I heard that. You said you feel more in tune with your reality when you disconnect from the news?
Yeah, I go through, like, I call it a cleansing where I have to listen to the news to some extent for my work. But usually January, February, and March, I will give myself no access to the news. I'll ban it. And during those months, there's always the first week is there. It's almost like I'm going through some kind of drug withdrawal. But after I get through that, I always feel more vibrant and alive as a human and in tune with reality. And then when I go back in, there's like an initial rush of like, oh, back into the news and reading about it and talking to people again. And it feels good for a few days. And then I'm back onto that. Like, oh man, this is gross.
Well, Matthew, I want to ask you, so for people who are still hesitant to, you know, who are trying to be better, but they're not, with their eating habits, what is the first step that they should start doing? I know, like, your carnivores is what you recommend in the book or Savings chapters. But how do you help someone just kind of take that initial step?
Yeah. So, I mean, the first thing you need to do is start off your day with red meat. And this was great advice given to me by Nina Teicholz, who wrote The Big Fat Surprise. I asked her that same exact question because I still struggle too. I mean, I'm carnivore. But I generally still drink coffee. So I'm like not, I don't know if some people consider that non-carnivore. There's certain things I'm not as strict about, but if you're starting out, don't be too hard on yourself, but know that you're poisoning yourself with all these grains. And it's not natural to be eating, as the government recommended in the 1992 food pyramid, 8 to 11 servings of grains a day. That's a recipe for metabolic destruction. A lot of the hunger people feel is the result of lack of nutrients. So you're eating all the time, like an ape eats all the time because they primarily eat leaves. So they have to eat all day long to satisfy the nutritional demands of their body. And most fiat humans are like this, where they have to graze. They're eating plants all day, so they have to eat all day. They're not getting the nutrients they need. And obesity in the past, it used to be kind of a sign of affluence. Today it's more of a sign of nutritional depravity. And if you start out your day with protein, with meat, then what you find is your cravings are substantially lower. You're no longer trying to like find all these different foods because your body is satisfied. It's got the nutrients it needed. If you could get a ribeye, I mean, in the morning, I don't eat breakfast, but my first meal is about 11 o'clock. And I start off with a ribeye, and I know that's a luxury not everybody can do. But just, if not a ribeye, then some red meat, some ground beef. And then don't think you can moderate addictive drugs like sugar. If you think that, oh, you're just going to have a little bit of sugar, you're lying to yourself. I've done that many times, lied to myself about this. Just don't get on that wagon. You'll go a day or two where you feel like shit as you're withdrawing from sugar, but try to stay away from refined sugar, away from plants as much as possible, and give your body the nutrients it needs, and then you won't be craving these foods that serve as toxins to our system.
One thing that was like a big eye opener for me is I went off of sugar for, I'm not as strict, but I did go off of sugar completely for a couple of weeks, and happened to do it like right around Halloween time. And when I was around that bowl of candy that my kids had, it was like the same, like it felt like the same region of the brain that I was a former smoker. So like, it seemed like that same like area was like activated, like, oh, like I need this piece of candy, the same way it used to feel like, oh, I need this cigarette, you know? So like one, like that was a very like eye opening kind of sensation and, experience, to me. And I'm sure other people notice it too, if you cut sugars out entirely. But that really like, I was like, oh wow, like that really is an addictive drug.
We've normalized sugar as a normal part of our food supply. And the reality is it isn't. I mean, not refined sugar like this. So, you know, in the 1800s, when sugar became a greater part of the American food supply, it was mixed with a little bit of molasses. But it's shifted, and the process which we now extract sugar is not dissimilar than that of how we extract cocaine, where we get the very purest essence of the plant. And now that we've normalized this, the amount of sugar consumption in America, you always find that the less people eat saturated fat found in meat, which is a real staple of health, the more you have to fill ingredients with sugar, because the fat is what gives food its taste. And any chef will tell you this. So as we've lowered the saturated fat amounts in the American diet, we've had to raise the sugar. And it's not a coincidence that diabetes is the most destructive killer in America today. It almost makes me wonder, like, it's by intent. I mean, because of course it's obvious. I mean, sugar causes diabetes. You know, we've been consuming so much sugar. Since 1971, we've more than doubled. And I'm not even talking about high fructose corn syrup, which is more potent and more concentrated form. And it's everywhere. But you almost have to, it goes back to what we were saying before, you almost have to opt out of the system entirely. I mean, my kids go to birthday parties and they can't eat the cake. And I'm always the weird parent, you know, and I don't want to be the weird parent. And my kids do get sugar sometimes, but they have 30 kids in their class, and like every day it's somebody's birthday. So like every day they're eating cake and getting jacked on food dyes and things. And it's, you just have to be vigilant. You kind of have to be the asshole parent sometimes. But it's hard, and I don't pretend like it's easy. I mean, it's something I battle every day. Fortunately, I haven't had sugar in, I'm talking like an addict, but I haven't had sugar in like 4.5 months right now. So I do have some breakdowns. I'm not going to pretend like I don't, but overall it's been pretty good. I've been able to stay away.
Like my kids, I've noticed, because like I mentioned, like we try to restrict like sugar intake and stuff. When we go to parties, a lot of times they won't even eat like the whole serving. They'll eat some of it and they'll say, okay, I've had enough. Or they'll even turn down some like cupcakes and stuff if it's got just too much. Like those ones that are like pure sugar, they'll just say, oh, it's too sweet for me, I don't want it. So, you know, I think, you know, I mentioned earlier, but definitely getting your kids started on that path early is much better than waiting till later. And in terms of intentional forcing diabetes, something has to save Social Security.
That's a great point.
Yeah, I was just going to say, my kids are getting into their double digits now. And I remember, you know, kind of going through this in the early years where you're like, hey, man, you know, sugar's not really good for you. You should probably be a little more cognizant about what you're putting in your face, especially at different times of the day. And I think, you know, one of the easiest lessons for these guys to learn, at least for me, was when they, you know, would indulge in sugar. And this is one of those things where, you know, it was kind of this monitored thing. It wasn't like, hey, go have all the sugar you want. But, on, you know, on certain days where they would go in and they would hurt, you know, like they take in so much sugar, and they get a bellyache. You have an opportunity in that time and space to really teach them, hey, listen, what you're doing is wrecking your body. Your stomach is literally reacting to the amount of sugar that you've ingested. If you don't like the way this feels, don't do it again. And, you know, once, twice, three times, somewhere in there, it starts to stick depending on which one it is. But it was a much easier lesson, when there was pain, that was brought on by themselves after, you know, not listening.
Pain is the ultimate teacher. Matthew, I have a question for you from one of the listeners. They want to get your take on a carnivore diet versus an animal-based diet like Paul Saladino suggests.
Well, I can only speak about what works for me. I'm not very familiar with Saladino's diet. I do raw milk. So one of the things that happened when I did the carnivore diet is I play a lot of basketball with people much younger and in better shape than me and taller than me. And I lost so much weight that I began getting kind of tossed around the court. So I introduced raw milk into my diet, and it was a big game changer because it kept me out of ketosis. And I love being in ketosis, but just long term for me, it didn't work. So I do raw milk. I do a little bit of raw honey. And I do a lot of steak, and that's basically my diet. A little bit of coffee and a lot of water, and it works for me. I try to listen to my body a lot, and because I also run every day, a few miles, and that's always my best barometer of how I'm eating. It's like, okay, so am I getting enough sunlight? Am I eating enough nutrients? Am I sleeping well? Am I controlling my stress? It always comes out in mile three of my run. So mile one, I can kind of fake it. Mile two, I can get some clues, but mile three, it's when my body says, you need to shift, you need to change, or you're doing great. I know Saladino has been like a big inspiration to my wife. She mentions him quite a bit to me, and I've meant to look into his work more. I know Safe had a podcast and I listened to that and it seemed great, but yeah, I'm not really familiar with his diet. Is it something similar to, it's carnivore, right? But with a little bit of plants.
Yes. And natural sugar. So fruit, honey, and red meat.
Okay. I mean, that seems to, if he can control it. My issue with like having an orange, okay, is first of all, the oranges today are not what they were 100 years ago. The apples today are not what they were 100 years ago. So finding pure fruit is just like, it's really difficult. And then to find ones that have not been fucked by Monsanto, and you're covered in all kinds of shit. It's just, and it's like people used to eat berries. Our ancestors used to find berries in the Northeast for a few weeks out of the year. And that was if a bear didn't maul them, and they would eat berries. But not in January in Arizona, right? So I guess there's something to it, and I don't have all the answers to what the perfect diet is. I definitely think if you avoid, another side thing for me is that if I eat an orange, it brings my cravings back. So suddenly I'm craving sugar all the time again, and I'm not thinking about the things and focused on the things that I need to be focused on. Instead, I'm constantly trying to figure out when I'm going to have my next sugar fix. And maybe other listeners don't have that issue. I do. So I just have to like, I can't moderate that. I have to just, I don't want that voice in my head constantly asking me when I'm going to have my next sugar fix. It's easiest for me to just eat meat. If I'm having a real craving for anything, raw milk solves that craving 100% of the time.
So I'm the same with you. I find if I do have a little bit of a sugar craving, raw milk, whole fat yogurt will really help me curb any of that sugar craving. We are at the top of the hour, so I just want to get a time check, Matthew. Are you able to stay a little bit longer if we have some more questions? I know we haven't heard from Infra or Bob in a while.
Yeah, I just have to go. I have about 14 minutes. I have to pick one of my kids up, and nobody wants to hear about this, but yeah, I have about 14 minutes.
Oh, that's perfect. Yeah, we'll keep you up for a little bit longer then, if that's okay.
Great.
Infra or Bob, did you guys have any questions? Okay, I'm gonna kind of go back to what you were saying with running, Matthew. So when I tried carnivore for on and off for a couple months last year, and I like to do a lot of long distance running, and I found that I, like you said, mile three, mile four, it was just I had nothing left in the tank, and I just felt completely depleted. What do you add to your diet to get past that, or what do you know that you're missing when you start feeling that way?
Electrolytes, salt. I put more salt on your food. I do electrolytes. I should have mentioned that. Especially before basketball, because I built a court at my house and we have like a tournament every Saturday. So I'll load up on electrolytes. So when hour two comes on and I'm still on the court, I don't hit that wall, because I know what you're talking about. I used to hit that exact wall when, I began carnivore, and it seemed like everything was good. My athletic and my physical prowess was the same, except when I needed to hit that extra level, when I needed to like dig in and find that extra level of athletic pursuit, I couldn't access it. The electrolytes and then the raw milk, I think, but definitely more so the electrolytes were what I've leaned on. And I found that it's helped get me over the hump.
Well, thank you. I'll have to start getting back to it again. And the reason I stopped is specifically for that. I just couldn't keep up anymore, and it was just becoming draining. So thank you. I've got one last question for you. Go ahead, Shane.
Yeah, I was going to – mine's not a serious question, so why don't you go ahead, Coleman, and I'll wait.
Well, I was going to ask on my feed, on my X feed, I don't know if it's just the algorithm manipulating what I'm seeing, but I'm finding more people are starting to become aware about healthy eating and seed oils. Are you noticing that on your end as well? Are you noticing an increase in book sales, people just kind of finding out the truth of things, or is just X manipulating me?
No, I find this fascinating. I don't understand what's going on from a helicopter view exactly, but my sense is that there's a movement in America that isn't left-right, the traditional political paradigms. I notice it in the raw milk movement, for instance, where you have a lot of these very liberal granola crunchy moms buying raw milk and libertarians buying raw milk. Some conservatives buying raw milk. So I think there's a movement, and it's not the traditional left-right dichotomy. It's more about people who are going to trust credentialed authority versus people who are becoming more reliant on self-autonomy. And I think that's the divide moving forward, and that's what you're seeing. And I think it's growing. We're out of this bullshit right now of, I'm a Republican, I'm a Democrat. Like, I mean, it's that seems to be like antiquated 2012, right? We're evolving out of that, I believe, into and the people who there's still people who like wear those hats, and I think they're dinosaurs. They're all going extinct, and I say good riddance. I think one by one, they're all going to have to make a decision, and that decision's going to be, you know, are you going to wear the mask? Like, essentially, right? Like, the next thing that comes around after all the information that's come out, are you still going to just let them mask you? Are you going to take the newest pharmaceutical product? Or are you going to kind of step back and think, yeah, I don't know. Like, that's going to be the divide. It's going to be between people who no longer trust these authorities, who've been broken by COVID, like we've discussed previously, and the people who really believe that we need this elite intellectual crew to lead all of the rest of us into salvation. I think that's kind of what we're witnessing. And that's why it seems more like there's this topic's become just so much bigger. One of the things I just want to mention real quick that's kind of pissed me off though is that we have this moment where there does seem to be more of a focus on health and the corruption of our food supply. And, you know, like you have these Cali memes and the Casey memes is coming on, and I think they're doing great work in identifying and talking about the problem, but we're missing an opportunity when we're just always blaming greedy corporations, because the motivation for greed existed before 1970 when people were far healthier and people still ate primarily red meat. All of those motives existed. It's just sort of like undermining the reality. And I know economics isn't the sexiest thing to talk about. And it doesn't really fit in a great soundbite when you're doing your media tours. But the truth is, until we address the core issue of what caused the shift in our food supply, which was the degradation of our money, then we're just throwing snowballs at each other while, you know, riding on Ferris wheels. Like it's nonsense, and we're going to be in the same trap, and we're going to be keep feeding each other red meat. Yes, all of our government agencies have been captured. Yes, these corporations are making a ton of money. But yeah, I mean, we're looking at the patient on the table and we're saying, oh, look, you're fat, you're sick, all these different things, but we're not examining the core issue. Like what happened? And I hope that as this movement accelerates, I hope that Kennedy can miraculously get through these hearings. I hope we can open the conversation up and not let it just get hijacked by these people who are just going to constantly pin everything on corporate greed, which is a real thing, no doubt. Like, and it's a part of the story, but it's not the primary. It's not at the source.
Matthew, if I can just comment on that real quick, I see the same thing. It's not red versus blue. It's this, it's people who want freedom versus the globalist agenda. I think we've all seen the birth rates go down. We've seen, you know, obviously fiat food, fiat health, like all this stuff. I think there is, that's the movement. That's the divide. And there's some people out there who are going to keep parroting the old, you know, the old way, the old talk. And there's the rest of us who are fighting for freedom. So I totally agree with how you characterize all of that.
Yeah, that's a more eloquent way to put it. You're right. Like it's people who are more freedom oriented. On one side, it's true. And I think that we need to have compassion towards the other side, because I think there's a lot of ability to bring them over, because I think our argument is extremely compelling, because I've always been a big believer that the truth resonates, even amongst the most adamant dogmatic individuals. The truth kind of resonates on a different level with people.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's this, you know, the illusion of the left-right is like this line, right? And then there's like the counter to it where left-right is, you know, it's really a circle and they're both right next to the authoritarian, almost got it, like top. And then there's like liberty that's on the bottom of it. And like, that's where like neither of the left-right political spectrum are really, you know, pro-liberty. And I think that's kind of what you see there. And I don't think it's a mistake that like and I mentioned this in my article, Choose Bitcoin. I don't think it's a mistake that like we're fed that like, you know, the opposite of capitalism is communism. So when all these people get upset at what they think is capitalism, what they're really upset about is like this fiat monster stealing from us. You know, they turn to the thing that they've been taught in government schools is the opposite, which coincidentally gives government more power, you know? So, you know, I think it's all like, a big play just to, you know, make sure that at the end of the day, the government still has the power. And they can, you know, still run their schemes. You know, I think with Bitcoin and with these other things that we talked about, you know, from diet and education and all these other ways. And you said it pretty well earlier, just like unplugging from these systems, and decentralizing them. You know, that's the best way to counter this and to make sure that we don't fall into any authoritarian trap. Which is going to bring me to my next question is like, on decentralization, are you on Nostr at all, or, is Twitter your primary?
I'm not on social media very much at all. I'm not on Nostr. People have really encouraged me to get on it. I should. My Twitter is pretty vacant. You know, I don't post a lot. So yeah, I'm not the best at when I was on Twitter, but when my agent would always get on my ass and like, you gotta do 3 posts a day. It's just not me. I'm not good at it too. Like I watch Safe. It's like a master class on how to have these ridiculously amazing tweets. And like, I've tried to do it a few times and it just comes off as cringy.
And so you're probably healthier without social media. So I won't knock you for that one. I will knock you for is, your choice in chili though, which we tweeted about previously.
Beat me to it. Saving it for the last question. Okay. This is the most fundamental question of the day, by the way, Matthew. So don't mess this up.
So chili, when we tweeted, you said that you'd prefer, seed oil corn chip, also known as Fritos, over beans. And I've been trying to educate these guys that, you know, chili requires beans. So if anybody else has more serious questions, you can tell me to be quiet. But if not, we can close on this lighter note of chili
Listen,
choices.
Listen, man, so if I'm going to stretch away from red meat and if I'm going to eat some GMO Monsanto sprayed beans, I'm just going to go all out. I'm going to do Fritos and I'm going to feel like shit afterwards. I'm going to berate myself for an hour and a half later and run an extra 2.5 miles. But yeah, if I'm going to go to, I don't know if beans are much healthier than Fritos. I think they are. They probably are, but I'm not sure. So I'm going to err on the side of that crunchy goodness that I remember as a sophomore in high school.
We can go for the record here and we can say that beans are just as bad as Fritos. they're on the same par. So I'm going to leave it on that because that's what we really wanted to come on the show for, Matthew, is to pick your brain on beans and chili or Fritos. So I'm glad that you sided with the winning side, the winning team. Yomar, you're on that island by yourself, sir. But Matthew,
so,
what's
the island of correctness? That's all.
Matthew, where's the best way we can direct everybody to help support you?
Thanks, man. Just go to the Safe House if you're interested in any of my books, available on Amazon. And, as I said, I'm not great at self-promotion, but, I wrote these books for my daughters, really. I wanted to write something that would resonate long after I was gone. And I've actually never been more proud of a book than Fiat Food. And I love talking about the book. So thank you very much for having me on. I appreciate all of you. Thank you.
Hey, I would love it if you wrote a children's book. That'd be great because I can just give it to my kids and not have to try to do it myself.
I'm going to mention that to Safe right after we get off.
And the only thing with that, if you do write it, just come on here first.
Definitely, 100%.
All right, thank you. And I'm good at promoting Matthew's book. Like I said, it's a 1-2 punch for me. If you haven't got it yet, go to the Safe House. Try and avoid Amazon. Again, peer-to-peer, let's support other Bitcoiners. So go to the Safe House, purchase the book. It is a must read if you haven't read it, honestly. And it's just, we didn't even cover a lot of the shocking moments that you'll discover inside the book. And it's just, it's eye-opening on a completely different level. So I encourage everyone to go out there, support Bitcoiners, and go out there and get that book. So Matthew, thank you so much for coming on and I wish you the best of luck and I can't wait to read Fiat Medicine.
Hey, thanks again, guys. I appreciate all of you. Have a great day.
Thank you. Same to you. So that's it. Again, I was really looking forward to this. I was, ever since Christmas, I knew I was going to try and get Matthew back on. So, I was really, really, wanted to pick his brain again and not just about the chili comment. I knew he was going to side with me anyways. But Shane, Infra, Yomar, Bob, do you guys have anything else you want to touch on before we wrap up the show?
I just want to reiterate, if you are trying to red pill somebody or orange pill somebody, that isn't, you know, isn't really into like economics and finance and that sort of stuff, Fiat Food is a really, really great, entry point for them because everybody cares about food and, you know, most people care about like their health, whether they realize it, what the food is doing to them or not. So, Fiat Food's a really great like entry point. So, you know, if you have, you know, anybody in your life that you can't quite get them to read, the Bitcoin Standard or, Fiat Standard, any of those books, really recommend, you know, opening the door with, Fiat Food.
Yeah. And I just say, you know, real quick, and you know, this is a process of divorcing yourself from the system. Don't beat yourself up and think it's going to be overnight. As your stack of Bitcoin grows and obviously, you continue to divorce yourself from the economic world, I think a lot of things open up for you. And so, you know, if your intention is to do that, one of the things I can definitely, speak to is the fact that it's a lot of work, getting more self-sufficient, taking care of your diet, putting, you know, in place, the nutrients that you need, whether it's, you know, locally grown or you're growing them, whether it's food or, you know, cattle or any type of poultry, it's definitely worth the hard work. But this is going to happen over time. You know, it took me about, from 2007 till about 2020 to master that plan and put it into, fruition. And that was just the beginning of the hard work. So I will definitely say though, it is more than worth it for you and your family.
Don't let cost be something to set you back on this. Again, going out and providing for your family, like Shame said, going out and hunting, like deer meat is just as good for you. Maybe it's not just as good as beef, but it's going to be better than anything you get at the grocery store. And again, hunting licenses are pretty minimal in most states for residents. And I'm pretty sure every single state in the continental United States has deer. So, again, it's really, really easy to do that.
You can also check out like, local farmers markets for, somebody selling meat and stuff. And you can get, usually get meat from them a lot cheaper than you get it at the grocery store. I get like a half cow, from a guy that was just, you know, selling eggs and dairy at the local place. I asked him about if he's, and he had like a couple pieces of meat. And I said, hey, do you have, you know, will you sell me a half cow? He said, yeah, sure. You can come to the farm and pick one out if you want. And it's way cheaper than if I went to the grocery store. So that's another avenue you can check out.
Absolutely. Well, I'm going to wrap it up there. I want to thank everybody who tuned in, everybody who had us on the background and everybody who participated. And of course, everybody up here on the panel, Eomer, Bob, Shane, Infra, and of course, Matthew for joining us. And that was pretty cool. We had, Dr. Saifedean Ammous in the audience. So hopefully we can get him back, and actually up on the show and speaking. Hats off to Eomer on that one. He's been trying relentlessly for the last couple of months to get him on the show. So you get all the props for that, Eomer. Tonight, though, the Bitcoin veterans have the video podcast. New time is no longer at 7 p.m. It is at 9 p.m. Eastern time. So go ahead. It's live stream on Noster, on YouTube, and on X. So we'll send out links as the show starts, but don't want to miss that. It'll be a great discussion with the guys again. But that's all I have. Go out there and have an absolutely fantastic day, and I'll see you all tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Don't shitcoin, though. I'm going to reuse it again, Eomer. It's like putting beans in your chili and then eating it.